Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. 4 years ago, Wisconsinites revolted in response to a draconian measure gutting many hard-won labor rights. In an occupation of the Capitol that lasted weeks and drew as many as 100,000 protesters and international news coverage, ordinary people in the state of Wisconsin rose up against anti-worker sentiments pushed by Republican Governor Scott Walker. Since then, Walker has been able to stave off a recall effort and win re-election. Perhaps emboldened by that, he's pushing a controversial bill now curtailing the power of organized labor once more. Under the euphemistic title of the Right to Work, Walker and his fellow Republicans are fast-tracking a bill that would make it illegal for unions to collect mandatory dues from all members of a bargaining unit, even if those members benefited from the union's power. Such laws have passed in numerous states around the country, but in some states, such as a law in Indiana that Wisconsin's law is closely modeled on, they've been struck down in court. Well, just how close is Wisconsin to disempowering its unions? Joining me to answer that question is Jeffrey Summers, Associate Professor of Political Economy and Public Policy in Global Studies and Africology at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Welcome to Uprising, Jeffrey.
Hi.
Now, what exactly does the bill in question stipulate, and could it really strip Wisconsin unions of real power?
Oh, of course, it absolutely will. Now, this has already been done with the public sector workers with 2011, which is the reason that we had these very, very big protests. It was regarding this Act 10 law, and that essentially stripped public sector workers of these rights. So now Walker is following up with private sector workers with this right to work legislation. Now, it should be said that the police and the firemen are actually exempted from this. So these are the two sectors that I guess will not have the right to work in the language of the Wisconsin Republican Party.
And so that's quite interesting. And of course, these are traditionally unions that the right has often called upon and allied with. How do they justify this difference between these two sort of groups of organized workers?
Well, they really don't. And of course, it really represents a massive contradiction between their rhetoric and the reality of what they're doing. So, of course, they want to have these two sectors, the police and the firemen, loyal to them. And of course, the governor seems to think that perhaps, I guess, the police are a kind of Praetorian guard which need to be treated well. But of course, if one looked at it purely from the perspective of the discourse of the Republican Party in Wisconsin, we would say that they're being treated terribly, that they do not have the right.
Right, exactly.
It's quite hypocritical and almost funny.
Right, because the Republicans are saying that this is something that they're doing to help workers. And let's just clarify for our listeners what we mean what Republicans really mean when they say it's a right-to-work state is that when a union comes in or when there is a workplace that is unionized, the bargaining unit that's part of that workforce is supposed to pay union dues. You're not supposed to, you know, be able to check off necessarily whether you want to pay union dues or not. You're either part of the union if you want to be in that workplace, or you're not in the workplace altogether, because everyone benefits from the union's their bargaining power, and they collect dues, and those dues go into keeping that union powerful, also go into helping the union do their own political lobbying. And now they want to make it voluntary, those dues voluntary rather than mandatory. And it sounds like, of course, just a matter of individual choice. Is it?
Well, it would be like if you just didn't feel like paying your taxes.
Right.
So you just relied on your neighbors to do this. And of course, the more people that opt out from paying, the more that places the burden on those who actually are paying. So the goal here is to really destroy the unions, and of course they will do so. And the chief target is the Democratic Party. So in other words, labor unions are a significant funder of the Democratic Party, and so they don't want their opposition funded. So, you know, they're going this route. And one of the reasons that they will be increasingly successful is that as labor gets continually weaker, they can really confer fewer and fewer benefits on their workers. And so as wages just continue to go down, more and more people are just making the decision that they really can't afford to pay union dues when they're not getting the benefit of raises. So it really is eviscerating the power of labor unions.
and it feeds in on itself. Now, 4 years ago, the Democratic Party legislators took a strong stand. Many of them even fled the state so that they could say, hey, I'm not there for the vote, so you don't have quorum, you can't vote. I mean, this was a pretty serious protest. And of course, outside the voting halls were people camping out, thousands, hundreds of tens of thousands, and in some cases, 100,000 people. What are the protests looking like this week, both from the Democratic Party and ordinary people?
Sure. Well, there's not going to be another fleeing, of course, because this just will not do from the perspective of the Republican Party. And so it's much smaller. I mean, we haven't even seen a protest in the thousands. I mean, so we are not going to see a reprise of 2011 here. It's really a fait accompli. I mean, it's going to be done. The state senate has passed it. The state legislature will pass it next, and the governor will sign it. It's a done deal, unfortunately.
Now, they fast-tracked this bill, I understand, and there was only one public hearing. The Senate Labor Committee was supposed to have a public hearing, and people were organizing around it, and all of a sudden the vote was done and it passed the committee. Can you tell us the sort of farce that's playing out in terms of the Democratic discourse that should be taking place on this?
Yeah, well, I think from their perspective, they see themselves as having been elected, and once elected, they can just do whatever they want. So the public are, you know, kind of a nuisance, and from their perspective, are representing a minority interest in the state. So, you know, they won these electoral majorities, ergo, they get to rule and do whatever they want. So they're really not paying much heed to procedural niceties. Now, all of that said, we have to remember that there were massive amounts of external money that were spent here. And the state legislative district lines were redrawn, and there was a very serious kind of gerrymandering of districts, which was done to make the Republican majorities even bigger than they were. That said, I don't want to give the impression that Scott Walker is not popular. He definitely is. He won a general election across the entire state. So gerrymandering has nothing to do with his victory, but it certainly does with the state legislators and the state senate.
Now, what about addressing this law in court? I mentioned the Indiana law that this is modeled on was struck down in court. Can Wisconsin courts actually strike this down?
I don't think that's going to happen. The composition of the courts is such that it's just highly unlikely.
And so then how far have such laws spread around the country? And who can we point the finger at? Alec, the Koch brothers, both?
Oh, well, absolutely. And similar organizations. You have to remember that in Wisconsin, you know, we have this kind of dualistic character. It's kind of like a Brazilian soap opera with this evil and good twins that are coexisting. So, you know, we've had this very progressive tradition with figures like Robert La Follette and others. And then, you know, we've had Joe McCarthy, and we've also had, you know, the industrialists, which were the initial founders of right-wing think tanks in this country, such as the Heritage Foundation and the Bradley Foundation. I mean, this is where they were born. They were born among these industrialists here in Wisconsin. And so this is something that they've always wanted to do. I mean, it again, it defunds the Democratic Party from their perspective, especially in local elections, helps to drive down wages, but that goal has already been accomplished. So that battle they've already won. So it really seems as though it's a means to perhaps reduce the amount of money that they have to spend on elections to defeat Democrats.
So what about the fact that Scott Walker has his sights set on the White House? Does he see the pushing of this right-to-work law as a campaign issue that he can ride on to Washington, D.C.?
Oh, absolutely. You know, of course, before you actually win the presidency, you have to win the primaries and the caucuses. So he has to win the votes of the extremists within his party. And he's doing that. I mean, if you've seen the latest polls, he's just pulled away by some 10 percentage points from the rest of the pack. He's done several things which, in my estimation, have not been in the interests of Wisconsinites. So, for instance, even though I'm not personally a particular fan of casinos, in the southeastern part of the state, there was a casino that was proposed by the Menominee tribe, very, very popular among the residents of southeastern Wisconsin. They really wanted it. Governor Walker hesitated to make a decision in the year before the decision needed to be rendered. Right after the election, he then said no, and this was only some 6 days after receiving a letter from 600 GOP social conservative activists in Iowa, which of course is the first caucus, stating that their opposition, and he just rejected it. Not only that, but they were going to bring forward some 200 and $20 million to help finance a new stadium for our professional basketball team, the Bucks. Now the taxpayers of Wisconsin will have to pick that up. Furthermore, with Medicaid, he's rejected those funds from the federal government. So that's going to cost our state some $241 million over the next 2 years. We're a small state, some 5.6 million people. So Wisconsinites are paying massively, and by that I mean the taxpayers. We are really, really, really paying for this governor's White House run. Now, whether or not he'll be like a Ronald Reagan figure with the kind of Teflon coating and these things just slide off him, hard to say.
Well, we shall see. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Jeffrey Summers, and shedding some light on this very troubling trend. And we'll certainly also see how it plays out around the country. Thank you so much.
Sure, you bet. Take care.
My guest, Jeffrey Summers, is an associate professor of political economy and public policy and global studies in Africology at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And we've been talking about the so-called right-to-work laws that are being pushed through in Wisconsin and around the country.